Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This exhibition features all four of the Spanish artists' major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. Now on view. More at NortonSimon.org.
You have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes, too, when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
Hey, everyone. This is the weekend edition of the LA Report. I'm Leslie Beristein-Rojas with KPCC and LAist.com. LAist has featured a crowdsourced series this past year called Race in LA, in which members of our audience wrote personal essays about how their race or ethnicity shapes their daily lives. We've featured several of their stories so far here on the LA Report. So it's mid-September now, schools are back in session, and that brings me to today's essay. It's from award-winning author Jervy Turvalone. And back when he was little, Jervy's family moved here from New Orleans. They settled in LA's Jefferson Park neighborhood, where at first he went to a local private Catholic school. Let's just say things did not go well there for him. His teacher didn't like him very much, didn't think he was capable of much, and she wanted him to be held back. Luckily, his mom didn't buy any of that. She sent him off to the local public schools, and it was there, he writes, that his teachers saw his talents. Jervy's essay is called On Race, School, The Teacher Who Tried to Decide My Fate, and Those Who Let Me Decide It Myself.
I wonder what would have happened if my parents hadn't moved to the Jefferson Park area of Los Angeles after driving out here from New Orleans. What would have happened if they had moved to Palm Springs, as my mother wanted to do? How would Hillary, my oldest brother, have handled that? How would that have felt, being largely in a world of whites while looking like the whitest white boy when you thought of yourself as black? Hillary, my oldest brother by almost 10 years, presented so white that he was cast in The Spook Who Sat by the Door just by standing in the unemployment line at age 25. A casting agent magically appeared and asked if he wanted to be in a movie. "We need some light skin, N-word," he told him. I assumed the guy doing the casting was black, but I never got around to asking. Me, I had more problems to consider than how people saw me. I heard voices and had to sleep with my mother until I was 8 and ate everything to calm myself. I was afraid to die like it could happen at any second. It didn't help that I loved reading Dracula in the books of H.P. Lovecraft. My parents knew I might be damaged goods, so they wrapped me in layers of love and concern. And eventually I grew out of being panicked by my own thinking. Race ambiguity wasn't on top of the list of things to worry over until my 8th grade English teacher said, she'd just come back from Paris and pointed at me and said, "A lot of the boys I saw in Paris looked just like you with your rosy cheeks." I could hear the snarls of the hood rats in the back of the class who were looking forward to punching me in the face. The truth is, I have no French ancestry. I am 42% West African, and the rest Spanish, Portuguese, and Irish English. A good part of my genome is the path of the slave trade, but I didn't care about that as a boy. I just wanted to hide from accusations of having rosy red French boy cheeks. My parents sent me to Holy Name of Jesus Christ at Webb Elementary, and things didn't go well. My first grade teacher didn't think much of me. She actually thought that I was what she politely referred to as retarded, and that I should be held back and told this to my mother. I wondered how this nun couldn't have sensed that my mother was a volcano of rage, had already decided that the nun hated black people, and that she hated me because I was lighter than she was. It was complicated racial mathematics, but even if working from flawed premises, Mama always came up with the right conclusions. Then one day, I ate something to disagree with my stomach in the school cafeteria, and I vomited. The nun had me clean it up. I don't remember telling Mama about getting sick and making a mess and having to clean it up, but she somehow knew, and the next day, she requested a meeting with a nun who met with us before class. "Sister, did Jervy throw up in the cafeteria?" The nun, sensing that my mother was in a murderous rage, mumbled a reply, "What?" Mama pressed her. "He did," the nun replied. "Did you make him clean it up?" Let me explain this to you, sister. If you make my child clean up his own vomit again, I'll rip your veil off and put your face in it. You understand me, sister? The nun stood there, mouth hanging open, terrified to move. I was embarrassed and confused, but also proud. My mama, my brutal hero. So I got yanked out of Catholic school because my mama threatened a nun, and I was transferred to 6th Avenue Elementary School. The world was largely of one color. I didn't even remember white teachers. The only non-black people were the Japanese who still lived there in the Jefferson Park neighborhood. If you did see a white person, it probably was somebody like my mother who looked white, but was Negro, and she would have said, "This was my world, our world, isolated from greater LA." My reputation as a dull-witted troublemaker preceded me, and so I was given Mr. Martin, the sternest teacher in the world. Walking to his class was different. The boys were all on their best behavior. The girls were quiet too, in their cute dresses and plaited hair. Everybody was scared of him. Mr. Martin didn't play, not at all. Words were few, but if you didn't listen, he'd march you to the front of the class, bend you over, and swat your ass. He meant for it to really hurt. I don't remember but one black male teacher at the school, and that was Mr. Martin. He was a handsome, dark-skinned man who wore suits and who was a disciplinarian to seemingly all the black boys in the school. He played tapes of Dr. King.
And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land.
He'd constantly admonish us about the importance of education, that if we didn't educate ourselves, we were going to live bad lives and go to jail or worse. I didn't know who Dr. King was at the time, but when I did learn about him and all he accomplished, I thought of Mr. Martin as our MLK. Mr. Martin was tough and swatted our asses, but he was doing the best to prepare us for the attrition that was coming, that some of us would be spirited away to while away our lives behind bars, and this was only the second grade. He was right, though, in that many of the folks I knew then are dead or shells in themselves. The most rational think is that the broader society didn't have any use for us, except to fight its wars and fill its prisons. As Slick Rick sang in Children's Story back in 1988, walk the straight, narrow, or your soul gets cast.
Good night, good night, good night.
As super careful as I was, I could have been detoured too. Later on, a counselor noticed that I always had a book and I liked to read, and it became a question of why I was not in college prep courses. The nun had tried to decide my future. Teachers like Mr. Martin and Mrs. Lowry let me decide it for myself. A librarian named Mrs. Gold, the mother of the late great Jonathan Gold, saved little poop butt nerds like me by giving us a safe place to read. And there were other generous souls, teachers named Klewitz and Soloff and Deloise and Feldman, and white teachers who treated me and my classmates as though they liked us, cared about us, and wanted the best for us. After I sold my first novel, I thought of contacting Mr. Martin, but I was sad to hear he had passed away. I wish I had the opportunity to thank him for confirming what he tried to beat into us, our thick heads, that life was a minefield. If we wanted to get through it, we needed to be better than good and hella lucky.
Thanks for listening to this weekend edition of the LA Report. You can find all of the Race in LA essays at LAist.com. Suzanne Whatley and Nick Roman will be back on Monday with the AM and PM weekday editions. Until then, stay safe and have a great weekend. I'm Leslie Beristein Rojas.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.